This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of adult septic arthritis from the trauma section on orthobullets.com. As far as the epidemiology of adult septic arthritis, the most commonly affected joints in descending order include the knee, which make up approximately 50% of cases, then the hip, the shoulder, the elbow, the ankle, and finally the sternoclavicular joint, which is often found in IV drug users. Pseudomonas aeruginosa was the most common pathogen in the 1980s, while Staphylococcus aureus is now the most common pathogen in all patients, including IV drug users. Risk factors for adult septic arthritis include age over 80 years old, medical conditions like diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, cirrhosis, and HIV, history of crystalline arthropathy, endocarditis or recent bacteremia, being an IV drug user, or a recent joint surgery. With respect to pathophysiology, we'll go over the pathoanatomy, cellular biology, and microbiology. As far as the pathoanatomy, there are three etiologies of bacterial seeding of the joint, and this is bacteremia, direct inoculation from trauma or surgery, or contiguous spread from adjacent osteomyelitis. With respect to cellular biology, septic arthritis causes irreversible cartilage destruction in an involved joint. Cartilage injury can occur by 8 hours. And this is caused by release of proteolytic enzymes from inflammatory cells. With respect to the microbiology, the most common pathogen is Staphylococcus aureus, which accounts for greater than 50% of cases. Associated conditions with adult septic arthritis include prosthetic implant infection, which we'll discuss in more detail in another podcast episode. As far as the prognosis of adult septic arthritis, delayed diagnosis can lead to profound, extensive cartilage damage within hours. As far as the classification of adult septic arthritis, this is usually done by organism, specifically the Staphylococcus species, Neisseria gonorrhea, gram-negative bacilli, Streptococcus, Propionibacterium acnes, Salmonella or Streptococcus pneumoniae, Bartonella henseliae, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, Pasteurella multicida, Eikenella corrodens, and fungal/candida. With respect to Staphylococcus species, Staphylococcus aureus is the most common and accounts for greater than 50% of cases. MRSA and Staphylococcus epidermidis can also be seen. Neisseria gonorrhea accounts for approximately 20% of cases. This is the most common organism in otherwise healthy, sexually active adolescents and young adults. It manifests as a bacteremic infection and causes an arthritis dermatitis syndrome in approximately 60% of cases and a localized septic arthritis in approximately 40% of cases. Gram-negative bacilli account for 10 to 20% of cases. Pathogens include E. coli and Proteus, Klebsiella, or Enterobacter. Risk factors include neonates, IV drug users, the elderly, and immunocompromised patients with diabetes. With respect to Streptococcus, Streptococcus pyogenes or group A strep is most common, and group B streptococcus has a predilection for infants, the elderly, and diabetic patients. Propionibacterium acnes is associated with shoulder surgery. Salmonella or Streptococcus pneumoniae are seen in patients with sickle cell disease. Bartonella henseliae is seen in patients with HIV. Pseudomonas aeruginosa is seen in patients with a history of IV drug abuse. Pasteurella multicida is seen in patients after dog or cat bites. Eikenella corrodens is seen in patients after human bites. And fungal/candida species are found in an immunocompromised host. As far as the presentation of adult septic arthritis, symptoms include pain in the affected joint, fevers, which are only present in 60% of cases, and patients may appear toxic. On physical exam, infection may reveal erythema, effusion, and the extremity tends to be in a position of maximum joint volume. For example, the hip would be in the Faber position that is flexed, abducted, and externally rotated. Palpation on physical exam may exhibit warmth and tenderness. As far as motion, patients are typically unable to bear weight and have an inability to tolerate passive range of motion. As far as imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP and lateral of the joint in question. As far as findings, plain films may show joint space widening or effusion, as well as periarticular osteopenia. An ultrasound may help in confirming joint effusion in large joints such as the hip, and can be used in guiding aspirations. An MRI detects joint effusion and may detect adjacent bone involvement such as osteomyelitis. As far as specific studies to get, we'll talk about serum labs, joint fluid aspirate, and in certain circumstances, a saline load test. With respect to serum labs, in patients with adult septic arthritis, you may see a white blood cell count of greater than 10,000 with the left shift, an ESR of greater than 30, and keep in mind that the ESR is often elevated but may be normal early in the process. Remember that it rises within 2 days of infection and can rise 3 to 5 days after initiation of appropriate antibiotics and returns to normal in 3 to 4 weeks. Other serum labs include a CRP of greater than 5, and this tends to be the most helpful. This is also the best way to judge efficacy of treatment, as CRP rises within a few hours of the infection and may normalize within 1 week of treatment. Joint fluid aspirate is the gold standard for treatment and allows directed antibiotic treatment. The joint fluid aspirate should be analyzed for cell count with differential, Gram stain, culture, glucose level, and crystal analysis. Again, the joint fluid aspirate should be analyzed for cell count with differential, a Gram stain, culture, glucose level, and crystal analysis. Keep in mind that septic arthritis can occur concurrently with gout or pseudogout in less than 5% of cases. Characteristic findings of the joint fluid aspirate include joint fluid that appears cloudy or purulent. Remember that a cell count with a white blood cell count of greater than 50,000 is considered diagnostic for septic arthritis. However, lower counts may still indicate infection. A prosthetic joint with a white blood cell count of greater than 1,100 is considered septic. Gram stains only identify the infective organism 1/3 of the time. And finally, glucose is less than 60% of the serum level. With respect to a saline load test, this is utilized to determine if a wound near a joint communicates with the joint. For the knee, 155 milliliters of saline is needed to reach 95% sensitivity, and 175 milliliters of saline is needed to reach 99% sensitivity. As far as the differential for adult septic arthritis, it includes crystal arthropathy, specifically gout and pseudogout, cellulitis, and certain types of bursitis, for example, prepatellar bursitis. Treatment for adult septic arthritis is always operative, and specifically involves IV antibiotics and operative irrigation and drainage of the joint. Remember that septic arthritis is considered an orthopedic surgical emergency. With respect to IV antibiotic therapy, initiate empiric therapy prior to definitive cultures based on the patient's age and/or risk factors. In young healthy adults, Staphylococcus aureus and Neisseria gonorrhea are common, and in immunocompromised patients, Staphylococcus aureus and Pseudomonas aeruginosa are common. Make sure to transition to organism-specific antibiotic therapy once you obtain culture sensitivities. With respect to outcomes, treatment can be monitored by following serum white blood cell count, ESR, and CRP levels during treatment. With respect to the technique for operative irrigation and drainage of the joint, the approach can be performed either open or arthroscopically, depending on the joint. As far as the irrigation, make sure to remove all the purulent fluid and irrigate the joint. And as far as debridement, a synovectomy can be performed as needed. Make sure to obtain joint fluid and tissue for culture. Complications of adult septic arthritis include arthritis, fibrous ankylosis, and osteomyelitis. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 25-year-old man has a swollen, painful sternoclavicular joint. He denies using drugs or having any other medical conditions. Examination does not reveal any evidence of a dislocation. The joint is tender and slightly warm. The chest radiograph is normal. What is the next most appropriate step in management? And the choices are 1. CT of the chest, 2. Bone scan, 3. Irrigation and debridement in the operating room, 4. Lidocaine injection of the joint, and 5. Physical therapy. The correct answer to this question is 1. CT of the chest. A common cause of a septic sternoclavicular joint is IV drug use. Recently, however, there have been case reports of septic sternoclavicular joints in patients without a history of drug use. Therefore, this history should not be used as a predictor of severity or extension beyond the sternoclavicular joint capsule. Because of the risk of extension of the infection to the retrosternal area and pericardium, it's recommended that a CT scan be obtained before proceeding with any surgical management. A bone scan cannot accurately show abscess extension into the retrosternal area. Lidocaine injection and physical therapy should not be considered until infection is ruled out. Moving on to the next question. What is the antibiotic of choice for gonococcal septic arthritis of the knee? And the choices are 1. Erythromycin, 2. Penicillin, 3. Tetracycline, 4. Ceftriaxone, and 5. Vancomycin. The correct answer to this question is 4. Ceftriaxone. Gonococcal septic arthritis caused by the gram-negative diplococcus neisseria gonorrhea typically affects two age groups, newborns and adolescents. The level of penicillin and tetracycline resistance in neisseria gonorrhea is so high that it's completely ineffective in most parts of the world. A third-generation cephalosporin, such as ceftriaxone, is recommended in most areas. Fluoroquinolones may be an alternative treatment option if antimicrobial susceptibility can be documented by culture. In areas where co-infection with chlamydia is common, doxycycline may also be used with ceftriaxone. Moving on to the next question. When performing a saline load test to evaluate for a traumatic arthrotomy of the knee, a minimum of how much saline should be utilized? And the choices are 1, 30 milliliters, 2, 50 milliliters, 3, 75 milliliters, 4, 100 milliliters, and 5, 155 milliliters. The correct answer to this question is 5, 155 milliliters. A saline load test is commonly utilized to evaluate for intra-articular penetration of superficial lacerations, that is, a traumatic arthrotomy. In this technique, a large-gauge needle is used, for example, an 18-gauge needle, and saline is injected into the knee with passive range of motion provided. Saline egress from the soft tissue injury is a positive test, that is, a traumatic arthrotomy is present. The study by Nord et al. Found that the volume of saline that were needed in order to effectively diagnose 75%, 90%, 95%, and 99% of the knee arthrotomies were 110, 145, 155, and 175, respectively. The article by Keese et al. Found that 50 milliliters of saline successfully identified only 46% of known knee arthrotomies and that 194 milliliters was needed to reach a 95% identification rate. Moving on to the next question. A 38-year-old woman with diabetes mellitus reports a 6-week history of fever and pain localized to the right sternoclavicular joint. Local signs on examination include swelling about the joint, erythema, and increased warmth. Initial aspiration of the joint reveals staphylococcus aureus. Radiographs reveal medial clavicular osteolysis. What is the most effective treatment at this time? And the choices are 1, broad-spectrum parenteral antibiotics, 2, repeat aspirations, 3, irrigation and debridement, 4, hyperbaric oxygen, and 5, resection of the sternoclavicular joint. The correct answer to this question is 5, resection of the sternoclavicular joint. Based on the findings, the treatment of choice is resection of the sternoclavicular joint. Antibiotic therapy, repeat aspirations, hyperbaric oxygen, and simple irrigation and debridement are generally ineffective and associated with a high rate of recurrence. And the final question reads, a 45-year-old IV drug abuser has sternoclavicular joint pain for the past 2 weeks. He is afebrile and physical exam findings include point tenderness and swelling. He most likely has septic arthritis of the sternoclavicular joint. If so, what is the most likely infecting organism? And the choices are 1, Streptococcus pneumoniae, 2, Staphylococcus aureus, 3, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, 4, Staphylococcus epidermidis, and 5, Propionibacterium acnes. The correct answer to this question is 2, Staphylococcus aureus. Again, risk factors for sternoclavicular septic arthritis include IV drug use, diabetes, and HIV. According to the article by Ross et al., Staphylococcus aureus accounts for 49% of infections. Sternoclavicular joint arthritis accounts for 1% of septic arthritis in the general population, but 17% in the IV drug abuse population. Symptoms include spontaneous swelling with the appearance of joint subluxation and localized pain. These patients are not uncommonly afebrile. That's all for this review about adult septic arthritis. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.